Hi, my name is Ken. I'm an alcoholic. Good to be here with all you folks. I want to thank Ted for being such a good host. This has been a real nice couple of days. We got here at about 6 o'clock and set up all the chairs and set up the mics and brought in the stuff. And usually they just ask you to speak. you know, there was some painting needed done in the corner. We got to that. And it's like, hey, you here? Use them. It's real easy for me to talk about the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous because for me it truly is my owner's manual. And whenever anything comes up, I see everything in it in a spiritual context. And you have a lot of folks that go around now and do a real technical, in-depth deal with the big book. My deal is a broad stroke. In fact, when I told the guys I was coming here to talk, they always give me a going away gift to remind me to keep it simple. And this time I have socks. This one says left, and this one says right. You know? That's about how technical we get in my home group, you know? That's the depth of it, you know? We keep it real simple. I always kid that I took a guy from my group to get some bowling trophies a while back, and when we went into the store, these are the guys I get sober with and hang out with, he looked around and said, boy, is this guy good. No, we're just here to pick up the trophies, Paul. Oh, okay, gotcha. But this is the, and it's a good thing you have one here tonight. This is the, big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm going to ask you to try to do something which is very difficult, and I know because people have asked me to do it on occasion. And that is to try to just blot out of your mind anything you know about the big book for a moment, the next 45 minutes to an hour, and just try to listen with an open ear. Not that I know something that's universally well for you guys, but I'm going to be talking strictly from experience. And the deal is that in getting sober and staying sober, and Julie and the folks who have been here, Max, and the people who have been here long times can tell you, that over the last 10 years, 15 years in particular, there has been a real change in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, not from the standpoint of the book and the literature, but a lot of cottage industry has set up around it. And oftentimes, and I'm not at war with anything, because I'm one of those people who enjoy life, and I stop fighting everyone and everything, really. And the deal is that sometimes newcomers coming in can't tell the difference between what's Alcoholics Anonymous and what's this cottage industry. And it causes a lot of concern. When I got sober back in 1970, there were 5 old-timers for every newcomer. And now, according to New York Today, 90% of the people in the program have 4 years or less. So what's happening is the number of, in quotes, old-timers, and not that old-timers in and of themselves are sacrosanct. I'm not saying that. I'm saying they've had the experience of having walked the walk. And if nothing else, they have a lot of experience. There's a word I love, and to me it kind of describes everything that goes on right now. And the word is ersatz. It's E-R-S-A-T-Z. And ersatz, if you look it up spiritually, means it's substitute. It's not the real thing. This book talks about the great reality. And if you're going to get sober and stay sober in Alcoholics Anonymous and live happy, joyous, and free, along the way, what you will come to do, maybe not the first day, the first week, the first year, the first decade, but you will come, you'll be on the path to grow spiritually. And as you grow spiritually, you'll come to a point where you'll put everything that happens in your life in a spiritual context. Now, in the beginning, that's hard because you see it as a financial problem, a health problem, or this problem. No, it doesn't happen here, but in our area, relationships. I know in Springfield, you all marry and go off in bliss forever, but, you know, that's not the way it works where I come from, you know. They say the Lord's Prayer, and they keep saying, I do, I do. No, honey, you're in the wrong place. But the deal is that no matter what you think the problem is spiritual. And it's not what's happening, it's what you're doing with what's happening. You know, experience isn't what happens to you, it's what you do with what happens to you. Somebody showed me the Chinese word for crisis, and it's a little symbol, because they write in symbol pictures. And part of the word is opportunity, and part of the word is danger. And the deal is that's what makes up crisis. It's part opportunity, part danger. The danger is your way of living in some degree is being threatened, and the opportunity is that hopefully you'll grow from the experience. You'll have an experience and you'll grow. And one of the toughest things to do is what you're doing right now is to listen, because so many times I'll say something or anybody will say something, and you already have a web of words that keep those words from getting through, you know? It's like the guy who was 80 years old, and he went to the doctor for a physical. And the doctor looked at him and examined him, and when he was all done with the physical and he got all the results in, he said to the guy, you know, you have, according to these results, the body of a 50-year-old man. And the guy said, really? He said, yeah, and looking at you, you look 50. No one would ever believe you're 80. So the guy went out to pay the bill, and while he was paying the bill, he said to the nurse, how old do you think I am? And she said, well, looking at you and looking at these results, I'd say you're about 50 years old. He said, I'm 80 years old. She said, well, you certainly don't look 80. He says, that's my name. I'm 80 years old. So not leaving well enough alone, as he was walking out, there was an 80-year-old woman sitting there. And he said to her, miss, how old do you think I am? She said, come here. So he went over. She undid his fly. She put her hand in and kept it there for about 10 minutes maneuvering him. Took her hand out and said, you're 80 years old. And he looked at her in total amazement, and he said, how did you know that? She said, I heard you tell the nurse. So, so this is about listening and learning, you know? Because later on I might ask you, how old do you think I am? You know, and that's the deal. And it's while you're learning and while you're here and you're having the experiences of life, you're enjoying it. You know, you're enjoying yourself. This book goes to great length to talking about being happy, joyous, and free. It doesn't talk about being unhappy, miserable, and tentative. You know, that's not what it promises. Max read the promises, and he said, you know, all these good things will come to pass. And these things will come to pass when you learn to let go of all your old ideas. And most of your old ideas are selfish and self-centered. And you hear people running around today, and they're trying to connect with their old idea. I mean, you hear them make up terminology that's very fraudulent because it doesn't add any new knowledge. You know, if you took apart anything that's being said, it's selfish and self-centered. You know, that's really the whole deal. Even now, somebody used the word codependent. It's not like you're codependent. You're not doing anything for anybody else. You want things for yourself, and you're just not getting them. And so the reality is to look at things in the spiritual context, and that's what this book does. And ersatz gets in the way, because ersatz is where the money is. You know, you can buy this book for $6 if you're an alcoholic and say, okay, I'm going to use this whenever I have a question about alcoholism. I mean, I see people today, you know, they're writing books about all kinds of stuff. You know, sex without partners, and, you know, it's like some of their meetings get out of hand. But, you know, like, the reality is you can get all caught up in that kind of stuff. And all around us is insanity. You've got to come to the realization that there's a lot of insanity. And folks are trying to be, in quote, normal. And there is no normalcy. The only normalcy is what you in your own life interdict between you and God as you understand Him. I mean, I see things now that just make me wonder. You know, you become aware as you're sober. You become aware of things. You know, I noticed that everybody on 2020 wears glasses. I didn't know that before. See, I wasn't aware of that. Now I noticed that. So I noticed that Sara Lee pound cake only weighs 10 and 3/4 ounce. You know, I wouldn't have known that before. So you wake up, you become aware of stuff. And that's what this book is a journey about. It's not a book about change. Now, I have no trouble with the word change because it's commonly understood. But really, we don't change. If you wake up in the morning and you're a rose and you want to be a daffodil, it's going to be a long day, you know? It's a long day because you already are something. And what this book allows you to do is take some steps that are all spiritually based and come back to the fact of who you really are and accept yourself for who you really are and live in the moment with who you really are. It has nothing to do with any of this other nonsense. I'm always surprised that people can read How It Works and God is mentioned 4 times in the 12 steps. I don't count such things, but people tell me who do that God is mentioned anywhere between, depending who does the counting, 130 to 145 times in the first 164 pages. I think this has something to do with God. You know? Now, I know that upsets somebody. He's like, well, you know, I don't know. I can't handle God. That's okay. He'll handle you. You know, like, don't worry about it. You know? And the bottom line is that people say, well, if you mention God, we'll scare people out the door. Don't worry. Booze will bring them back. You know, like, you know, they'll get beat up and they'll end up coming back. And that's what this is all about. It's getting rid of ersatz. It's taking the invention of Ken or whoever you are and going back to the creation of God. And the book talks about that. It talks about becoming conscious of his presence. As we become conscious of his presence, we lose our fear of today, tomorrow, and the hereafter. We are reborn. That means we're okay again because we understand who we were. I hear people say, I'm seeking God, and I understand what they mean. And I always interrupt them and say, you don't have to worry. You're from God. God isn't there. God is here. God isn't then. God is now. And if you're not living in the now, you're missing your only opportunity to visit with God because that's where he hangs out. And our book tells us that real clear. It says, there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. Doesn't say, well, you know, hang out here, you'll find him tomorrow, you know, you'll find him next week, you'll find him yesterday. God exists in the now. And my theory on this, I chucked the word theory, my experience with this is that if you are living a complete life in the moment that's full and joy-filled, then there's no need to be running around doing most of the stuff you watch people do. The reason people are not living in the moment and are running on all these other cycles is because their lives are not full. And if you talk to them about service, they get offended. You know, what are you doing for someone else? Service is the rent you pay for being sober. You know, and the book talks about it real clear. It says, you know, we're to be of maximum service to God and our fellow man. This is about getting out there and doing something for someone else on a daily basis and not expecting something to happen wonderful to you every second. And it takes time to get there. I know when you come in, it's like, you know, you got these real problems. No one else has ever had them. You know, no one else has ever been financially strapped. I mean, some guy said to me the other day, Ken, remember when I asked you to be a character witness and you came and I had no character? You know, that's the kind of guys you meet, you know? You know, you meet those guys when they're new. And you watch how they grow. And what they do is they don't become perfect. They just grow spiritually. This is a place where we can come with all of our warts shown. And what we can talk about is growing spiritually. And I love that word ersatz for that reason, because it allows that. And consciousness. How many times the book mentions conscious? You know, we become conscious of his presence. Not we have to worry and wait until he arrives. He's already there. We're just asleep. God is always present and we're asleep. And the spiritual part of this thing, most of the time, people just walk right by it. They're so busy taking the book apart technically that they miss out on the real basic thing. The book defines our disease beautifully when it says, we suffer from a spiritual malady. And when that spiritual malady is overcome, we'll straighten out mentally and physically. In here, when it starts into the stories, it doesn't say, these are the stories of people who have recovered from alcoholism. As it starts into it, it says, these are the stories of people and how they got over their malady. Their malady. It's a spiritual thing. And once you learn to live in the spiritual realm, it's not the flower, it's the fragrance. It's not about, you know, being able to dissect it. It's just living it. And it's like saying, hey, this thing has been here all along. I was just never aware of it. I don't know about you, but I go to a lot of meetings, and I hear at meetings people saying, I was coming home from the same job, in the same car, to the same home situation, but today it was okay. It's okay. And the it that they're talking about is God. They don't realize it, but it's okay. When your conscious contact with God is okay, everything else is okay. And when it's not okay, I don't care what else you're doing. And I watch folks get hooked up in, you know, modern day stuff, new wave stuff. And we have a little saying in our group, marry the spirit of an age, you soon become a widow. it's real simple. You want to hook your star on this, it won't be here in a year or two. These folks won't be here in a year or two. In our area, we had 12 hospitals that had treatment centers in 1990. And a lot of these hospitals, and I'm not at war with these folks because they brought a lot of people into AA, but they used to say, don't go to AA, come here for aftercare. This is where you'll be able to get this aftercare. And these people would say, I owe my sobriety to such and such a hospital. And that's fine if you want to believe that. Today in San Diego, we have 3 hospitals. 9 of them are gone. 75% of them are gone. So if that was your recovery program, you suddenly don't have one. And then what do you do? And this is a daily deal. And it's about getting up in the morning and getting on and having some fun along the way. And not trying to figure out anything because you're not going to figure it out. The power that we get here, it's very clearly mentioned. The only power we get is to help other people. It says we have recovered and we've been given the power to help others. It doesn't say we have recovered and now we have the power to do as we please. You know, it doesn't say that. And you get a chance to notice everything. Like, I don't know about you guys, but I go down the highway and I'll see a car and it will have a bumper sticker saying, Friends of Bill W. And it will be very uplifting to me. And I'll think, geez, I wonder if I know that person. And I get all excited and I try to ride up alongside of them and see and look in. And, I wonder what meetings they go to. And then, and you want to be around people like that. Sometimes you know them and they'll wave and you hunk and stuff. And then you see somebody else and they'll have a bumper sticker saying, keep hunking, I'm reloading. You let that guy get ahead of you. And they're like, oh, yeah, that's okay. You go on ahead. It's all right. And you realize that all around us is insanity. Some people try to believe that alcoholics are uniquely insane. And we're not uniquely insane. We're just basically insane. And we live in an insane world. I mean, I flew into Oklahoma. They only have 2 airports in Oklahoma. Will Rogers and Wally Post. They both died in plane crashes. That's like having an Amelia Earhart School of Flying, And this, you see that all the time. I mean, I went to the federal building. There's a door there. It says, do not open this door at any time. Why have that door? And that's the kind of insanity, you just see it everywhere. And you just say, okay, that's it. And the only thing that keeps me balanced is coming to meetings, reading the big book, working with other people, and recognizing that my life is to be lived moment to moment, heartbeat to heartbeat. And that's why we talk about getting out of the head. You know, with all the books that are written about alcoholism and Alcoholics Anonymous, even by alcoholics who have gone public, they leave out one thing. And that is, the one thing in here is that I love the book because it's so specific in this area. It says, if you be alcoholic and you drink, something happens. Now, is that specific or what? So, let's see if I have this, Ken. I'm an alcoholic and I drink, something will happen? Yeah. Well, can you narrow that down? Go drink, Then you can report to us, If you drink and you're alcoholic, something will always happen. You may not notice it right away. You probably won't even remember it. But sometimes people will bring it to your attention. Law enforcement agencies, spouses, children, somebody will bring it to your attention. And the deal is that we've gotten so specific about terms. Someone said before, labels, labels, labels. Everything is labeled. Now I'm going to say something, and please hear it in the context in which I'm saying it so you don't run to your therapist and I get nasty letters, which really upset me. But people today work in the professional field of therapy. And listen to what I'm saying so you don't misunderstand what I'm saying, please. And they have never treated anyone spiritually healthy. They don't have any experience. Their whole experience is dealing with degrees of people who are ill. They have never had, to my knowledge, Buddha never went to a therapist. Christ never went to a therapist. Muhammad never went to a therapist. These guys didn't go in when they, oh my God, I'm being overwhelmed. Let me sit down with you. So these folks have never had someone spiritually healthy. So they've never treated a spiritually healthy person. They have no barometer for that. All they have is a barometer for people who are sick. Either are sick or think they're sick. Those are the kind of people that go there. You don't just wake up one day and say, everything is perfect. I think I'll go to counseling. At least, not in our area, you don't. And a buddy of mine says it very well. He said, neurotics build castles in the sky, and psychotics move into them. And psychiatrists collect the rent, you know? It's like a, And I'm not against these folks, and I'm not saying they don't do good. I'm just saying they have never treated a healthy, spiritually healthy person. So you don't have any barometer. In AA, what we have come to find out is that if we can get someone, and Dr. Bauer says it real good in the back of this book, under the medical view, he says the deal we do in Alcoholics Anonymous that helps the alcoholic the most is we help him not to have, and these are great words, excessive concentration on self. If you have excessive, you hold yourself under a microscope, you're going to find something wrong. I'm the youngest of seven. And my mom had four words that covered everything when we were young. We have no hospitalization. You know what? We never got sick. We learned a lot about butterfly stitches. But, you know, my brothers and sisters, we never had our appendix out. We never had our tonsils out. We never, because my mom just said, we have no hospitalization. So if you're not feeling good, you better lay down and get better. And it wasn't evil. It was just that's the way it was. And I watch people today. They wake up and say things like, even come to meetings and say things like, you know, there's something going on with me today. Maybe I should go get some tests run. Maybe I should go, no, just sit down, you know. Maybe you're just having a day, you know. Sit down. Give yourself a couple of days and see how it works out. You know, people are scratching stuff that don't itch. They have this excessive concentration. And you know what? When you're working with other people, you don't have that. And you know why we have a 12-step? Because a 12-step allows you to go and hear thoughts that you're afraid to tell yourself in private. When you're working with a newcomer and you go to see them, you don't want to hurt them, so you'll say things to them right off the top of your head that are gut-level honest. But if you had to face the same decisions at home, you wouldn't be able to say those things to yourself. So you get to hear them for the first time. It's like, wow, I'm giving this guy a lot of good stuff. And you know what? It all applies to me. It all applies to me. That's why we have it. That's why it's called, the spiritual awakening step. As a result of the spiritual awakening, you have a spiritual awakening because you're out of self. And this thing is just so, so simple. And you watch folks, you know, we call it milking a mouse, watering weeds, they have brain farts. You know, they just do stuff. You know, I'm having a brain fart. What does that mean? Something isn't going right in my life. No kidding. You know, like, what is it? Oh, I don't know. It's just something, you know. But wait till it becomes more specific, you know. You close a car door on your hand, you know you got a problem, you know. You don't have to call anybody up and say, what do I do? You know, you open the door. It's very specific, you know. I think I better get some help. You know, no, just open the door. But it's like a general malaise. It's like folks just want that attention. And I'll say this, and I hope again you hear it correctly. If you go to a meeting and you say, boy, I had a terrible day. I thought about drinking. I'm unhappy in my home life. I'm depressed. I'm suicidal. Everybody after the meeting wants to take care of you. But if you go there and say, you know, as a result of being sober, one day at a time in Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm happy, joyous, and free, and my life is good. It's like, well, you're in denial, you know? You know? You know? People confuse denial with recovery, you know? No, I'm doing good. I don't drink today not because I'm afraid to go back to something. I don't drink today because this is the best it's ever been for me. This is the very best it's ever been for me. If you took away whatever I have in a material sense, and it may happen shortly, the way things are going, I would still be okay. And I'll be okay because I'm okay. You know? Someone sent me a survey the other day because I said something in a meeting, which, of course, someone took offense to. And being so sensitive, I was upset. But 85, according to the latest survey, 85% of the youngsters who grow up in alcoholics' homes do not become alcoholic. Do not become alcoholic. And yet we spend all our time talking about this 15% that do become alcoholic. Now here's another figure, and I don't like figures, but about 10 to 15% of the people who never grew up in an alcoholic home have troubles in life, serious troubles, simply because they don't know how to cope. period. So the ratio is the same. It's not like suddenly you grew up in this home, you got a terrible thing. I tell people when I grew up, we read Huckleberry Finn. Huck Finn grew up in a dysfunctional family. His father was an alcoholic. He was one of the most resilient kids you could have. He just said, I'm going to go live life. He even helped a slave when helping slaves weren't popular. I think it had to do in this state. But the deal was is that kids become resilient. And these kids that grow up in these homes learn to be resilient. And they go out and they live happy, joyous, and free lives. And what they simply do is recognize this is one part. And it's not about carrying that over to something else. And so I always suggest to people, why don't you read the book? And when you feel like you really have an understanding of it, then go to meetings and talk about the big book. Not about what was Bill thinking when he wrote this. You know, who cares? The thing is, it's written here that the answers for us are in this book. We take these steps. We let go of old ideas. We grow spiritually. If you're having a heart attack, that's a physical problem, no doubt about it. But how you react to that and respond to that and go on with your life is a spiritual problem. It's, do you have enough trust and faith in God that you're going to be okay, that you are okay? Or is it going to be something where you want to suddenly jump off in another direction? I mean, it gets real, real simple here. And that's why I love to come to AA meetings, because I love to hear the people get up and tell about how they had this tremendous fear to face something, and now they're through it, and they have the experience of having gone through it, and they're okay. And you'll hear them say, you know, I'm okay today. This is okay. And I always tell people, if you don't think this is a perceptional problem, then just imagine tonight all the problems you have right at this moment, how serious they are. I know they're serious. I can tell by your faces. These are serious. But if someone were to tell you in the morning you have 48 hours to live, how many of those problems would continue to be serious? You would live a whole different life for a couple of days. So the idea is to live that life. Because that may be the prognosis, you know. No one really knows for sure. I hear people casually say, well, first I'm going to get this portion of my life together, and then I'm going to get this portion. Then I'm going to do service work. You say, oh, isn't that wonderful? Well, you go over there, honey, and you get that all together. And if you're still sober, come back to our meetings, you know. Don't you love it when these folks make cameo appearances? You know, I'm here. This is my 17th chip for having less than 10 days, you know. Oh, yeah, we are. Rudy, you must be back again. Yeah, glad to see you, you know. And then these old-timers come in who are just doing the deal on a daily basis. And they have developed a routine which is terrific. And I can see sometimes why newcomers have problems, because everything we tell them in AA is paradoxical. The truth is paradoxical. It seems to be this, but it's that. And the reason that God made truth paradoxical is because he knew the minds he gave us. In order to get through that mind, you got to fool them. So the newcomer says to you, well, how do I win here? And you casually say, ah, you surrender. Oh, thanks. And how do I keep it? Oh, that's easy. You give it away. Oh, yeah, I'm on a roll now. They say things to me like, Ken, do you have problems and you have trouble making a decision? I say, ah, sometimes yes, sometimes no, you know? Ken, what do you do when you feel procrastination coming on? Hey, I put it off, you know? I don't want to deal with it. And the deal is that's how simple it gets. And like you're laughing, if someone were to give you those answers, you would not only laugh, but in your laughter you would be reconfirmed to the fact that this couldn't be all that bad. But if I start laying on you all these terms that just came into being in the last 10 years, you would get like, well, now I got to work on this, now I got to work on this, now I got to, oh, my mother and my father and my uncle and my inner wound and my outer child and, you know, my bear and... It's like watering weeds, you know? Oh, there's flowers over there. I don't have time. You know? When I get time, I'll do that. Looks pretty, you know. Now, I love guys that come up to you because they've tried all this other stuff, and then they call you, never 2 in the afternoon. It's always 10 o'clock at night, you know, 12 o'clock at night. And this is the way the conversation goes. Ken, my whole life has fallen apart. For some reason, my program is not working. What should I do? And I always say, well, try ours. You know, we got it right here in the big book. come to meetings, try to read our literature, and then, you know, see if you can't get back on the beam. You know, if you want to get hit by a train, you got to play on the tracks. That's heavy out in my neighborhood. It's like, okay, let's see if I... Now, if I want what you have, then I have to do what you guys do and go where you guys go. Yeah, I know this is heavy. I know this is heavy. You know, this is the best bang for a buck in town. You know, like, yeah, this is heavy stuff now. You know, like, if you want what we have, if you want to be happy, joyous, and free, then you have to do the things we do. Now, you don't have to do them exactly the way we do them, but you have to be willing to do them. And the great part of that is service work, is being able to get out and do something for someone else. How many times in this book does it mention that? We have a new employer. We're to be of maximum service. God wants us to walk with our heads in the cloud with him, but our feet firmly on the ground so we can be of help to our fellow men. It doesn't say, you know, okay, you're sober now. Run and find something to confuse you. Doesn't say that. It says spiritual progress. We're not perfect. We were never meant to be perfect. There are some things we will never know, and we don't have to know them to be happy, joyous, and free. All we have to do is be willing to live in the moment. I mean, that's why I don't want to give anyone an offensive attitude, but it's like when you watch folks continually put themselves through this gristmill and then not like what they have, and spend literally thousands of dollars. Some woman told me the other day she had to sell her condo so she could continue with her therapy. She was selling it to get the money. Now, I say to her, you know, your problems are alcoholic. Why don't you come to the meetings? And it's like, at this point, it's past her. It's just past her. She's so confused with names and terminology and reading this book. There's a book on the market now. You know, there used to be, the one was Women Who Love Too Much. Now the new one is Women Who Love Men Who Murder. You know? These gals wait until someone's murdered someone and they're on death row and then they marry them. In California, we have about 20 of these people. And now they want to have their sperm frozen and passed on to someone else. And the state is saying, we got enough of your sperm right now. I think, you know, like, you know, I don't think we need that. But that's what's going on the periphery. And if you listen to the news every night and you listen to it in the morning and you listen to it going to work and coming home, you tend to think that's the world. And folks, that is not the world. That's just the worst of it that goes on a daily basis. I don't listen to the news because I like the truth. And it takes a while for the truth to filter down. You know, and the deal is that, you know, you watch folks, that stuff's going on all the time and they're into everything. And then the next day they're into something else. You know, today I wasn't home, but somebody said there was an earthquake. I know a half a dozen people. That will be the whole talk tonight. They'll be able to tell you where it was on the Richter scale, how many objects were moved, how many are still in flight. You know, by tomorrow they'll have an update for you that would be overwhelming. And then you know what? Monday night something else will happen. Some guy with gas will die, and it'll be, oh, he died of intensive gas, and they'll accumulate all the trivia on that. And you ask them what they're doing in terms of growing spiritually, and you ask them in terms of what they're doing for someone else, and they just don't have time for that. It's like, I don't have time for that because my whole life is consumed with crap. And then you wonder why you don't feel good. In our neighborhood, what we do is when you want to belong to our group, you do the service work. You learn to make coffee. And you say, how does that relate to growing spiritually? You make a minor commitment. You've probably never made a commitment to anything in your life. Now you come and you set up chairs. And you do basic things, and you start out belonging to the group. Now you're a valued member of the group because not only are you coming there to take something out, you're coming there to put something in. You feel better about you. You may be unemployed at the time, but now you have a full-time job. You're committed to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and the growth of yourself and other people. And it's like this kind of commitment. And in between, we do a lot of fun things. It's not like we go to meetings and we talk about, you know, how tough it is out there. You know, you see guys, you think you should give them bullets.
Yeah, it's the way I did it. Almost had some joy last week. But fortunately, I was restored to sanity, you know.
And you say, wow, that excessive concentration. You know, there was a guy, Thoreau, who said he'd give first prize to any human being who could live one day deliberately. And that's what this is learning to do. It's learning to live deliberately. It's learning to accept people just where they are, doing just what they're doing, the way they're doing it, because you understand that's what they have to do to get experience. The only way you can come to know God is through experience. You can have, and the book says, you can have a lot of beliefs, but at some point you'll come to have experience. And that's what mystics are. Mystics are people who know God through experience. They don't have to count on someone telling them about it. It's like, I had this moment, and hopefully there's a lot of these moments, where I just felt totally good with everything in the world because I felt totally good with God as I understand Him. And that's what this is about. It's growing along those spiritual lines, that getting rid of that ersatz. You know, there's a whole group of painters, and they call them, in Italian, they're called pentimento painters. And these are people who paint on canvas, and then they change their minds back in the 1600s, 1700s, so they paint over it. And pentimento simply means the artist repents. He changes his mind. Well, that's what happens here. We had a canvas when we came in, and it was a certain way. And what we do now is we get a chance to paint over it and to use some nice colors and to brighten it up and to do it the way we wanted to do it in the first place. But somehow we just missed out. And it comes by surrendering. And it comes by living totally in the moment. There is no yesterday. There is no tomorrow. This now is eternity. This now is the only opportunity to meet God and to have an understanding of it. And if you miss this opportunity, it's gone forever. That's what they mean by eternity. It will never come again. It's completely gone. And instead of focusing on all the stuff that's wrong, you focus on the stuff that's right. Someone sent me a little thing, and it had to do with a butterfly, and it was a man walking down the street, and there was a butterfly on the sidewalk, and it was trying to get out of its cocoon, which was no longer of any value to it. So here it was, and it was struggling, and so he went over and took out his pocket knife, and he cut the cocoon to let the butterfly completely out, and he watched it for a few minutes, and it died. And so he went and he asked his botanist friend what happened. And the botanist friend told him, the butterfly needs that struggle of getting out of the cocoon in order to have strength in its wings to live in the world. And that's what we go through here. We go through these little struggles and we get our experience that allows us to live in the world. And it allows us to live in the world no matter what's going on. And acceptance sometimes gets a very bad rap. People think acceptance is condoning. Acceptance is not condoning. Acceptance is acceptance. They're two separate words. Condoning is condoning. Acceptance means, I can't do anything about this. I'm powerless in this situation. I'd like to have it different, but this is the way it is. And it's this non-attachment, allowing everybody to grow up. Even though you look at some people and you say, God, I'm sure they're a hemorrhoid. You know, but you have to remember that they're one of God's kids and that they have the perfect right to be right where they are doing what they're doing. And no matter how they look to you, you know, it's like, ooh, you know. Are there some people that just grate you? And people come to me and say, Ken, when this guy comes in the room, the hair on my neck goes up. I just want to go over and punch him. And I'll say, well, that's the guy you want to get close to then, because there's something very special about him that right now you don't understand. And if you hang out with him and get close to him, you'll come to understand that. Now, that doesn't mean you allow someone to abuse you. It just means that people have different talents. We saw it last night at the little dinner thing. You give people a few minutes to be creative, and they're wonderfully creative as long as they're happy in what they're doing. People are always unhappy if you're forcing them to do things they don't want to do. And in AA, we say, hey, you come here, and you take the steps as we have them written out, and you go through them, and you grow spiritually, and as you're ready, you peel things off, and you try some new things, and you realize this whole thing is a risk. It's not a guarantee. You know, people say, well, you mean if I do this, then I'll get this result, and I'll be happy. I doubt it. You know, I really doubt it. You know? But why don't you start the process, see how it works out? And if you start the process, then it's an amazing thing. You know, there's a lot of contradiction in this book. You know, it says things like, half measures will avail us nothing. Then another part of the book, it says, we'll be amazed before we're halfway through. You know, like, okay, I know there's something in there for me. You know, and this book can be summed up in two words, spiritual compass. It's a spiritual compass. It's not telling you exactly what to do. It's telling you the path to follow. And I don't know about you, but my experience in recovery is I found my way on the way. I set out, and I'm not sure of a lot of things. And as I'm going along the path, the things that I need to know come to me. They don't come to me when I'm sitting at home thinking. This is very offensive, this next sentence. But thinking is what you do when you don't want to take action. You know? Thinking is what you do when you don't want to take action. You don't say, well, I'm thinking about that. Oh, that's great. That moves mountains, you know? You know? And there's always going to be critics. There'll always be critics because there'll always be people who'll tell you 10 reasons why you can't do what you want to try to do. And I always go back to my sponsor and I one time. There's a place on the Hudson River where Clinton first did the steam engine. And the story goes, according to the plaque, that he went out there early in the morning and he tried to get it started. And people were picnicking along the Hudson River there and they were yelling out, you'll never get it started. You'll never get it started. And then around 1 o'clock, a big puff of smoke came up and it kicked over and it started. And the same people yelled, you'll never get it stopped. You'll never get it stopped, you know. And that's how people are. They don't mean to be that way. That's just the way they are. And the deal is that when you're sober, you can allow all that. You can just be okay with that. It doesn't really matter what's going on with them. It's what's going on with you. And you have to have a lot of fun here. We do a lot of fun things, and you guys look like you do a lot of fun things. And sometimes you realize that, you know, that you can do stuff today that you couldn't do yesterday. Some stuff will work for you today that didn't work yesterday. Some stuff will work for you tomorrow that you never had a chance to do before. And that's what growth is all about. Take the risk and go. You know, give it a shot. Do it, as the kids say today. Go and do it. You know, don't sit around, try to figure it all out. And look at all this stuff that goes on around you. There's a lot of fun stuff. I mean, we live in a country today where a guy who's unannounced for president is leading in the polls. I think that's hysterical. You know, somebody else gets real serious about that. I think it's hysterical. We got a vice president who made a comment the other day about ecology. We have the greatest planet on Earth. You know? Guys in my group think they're vice presidential material now. You know? And contrary to what anybody will tell you, we're all, if one of us is God's kids, we're all God's kids here. We all learn to swim in the same water. And the idea is not to pollute the water we swim in. And it's to enjoy everybody who we come in contact with to the best of your ability. And these guys wrote this in a little book, $6. I don't know, is that what it still costs, $6? Five? Phew, what a bargain, you know? And then you'll have people who, you know, it's like they fall off a horse and they grab hold of the stirrup. Taking them around the parking lot. And those of us who love them are yelling out, let go, let go. And they're yelling, who, me? And they hit every speed bump. And then eventually they'll spend $10,000, $12,000 to take a course in how to hang on, you know? Oh, yeah. And, you know, my guys aren't like that. We say to them, you know, if the horse dies, you get off and get a new horse. You know, it's like, that one's dead. Don't try to ride it anymore. You'll know it's dead when it's laying on your leg, you know? This is not heavy stuff. And this book, thank God, was written for people just like me. When the alcoholic drinks, something happens. Deep. Deep. So, if I'm an alcoholic and I drink, something will happen. Boy, is that heavy. Think about that for a moment. Not long. Don't get in the habit. You know? And you realize that when, that's why you laugh at AA meetings, because you're laughing because it's not happening to you. You know, this could have been worse. It could have happened to me. You know? I'm at the point in my sobriety now where I think if you can't do it in bed, it's probably not worth doing. You know, it's like slow down time, you know? It's about just taking it easy and people coming up and running around and it's like, oh, Ken, this is happening and that's happening. And I tell them, you know, it's been happening for a long time. I think you just plugged into it today. You know, you just found out about it, but it's been going on for a long time. And then you watch the light in someone's eyes when they come to you and say, you know, I did something today I never did. I sat down, or I knelt down, and I prayed. And you know, we always say, when life ain't fair, turn to prayer. because prayer immediately puts you in the presence of God. And you get a chance to understand prayer and meditation. And even in that step, the 11th step, it says, you know, we pray to be conscious, to have a conscious contact with God. We already have an unconscious one. This is about waking up and getting on with life. It's not about standing still and trying to figure out what happened yesterday. Of course, you already had your best yesterday. You'll just never have another yesterday. But you can have a good today. And you can have a lot of fun today. And if you're not having fun, you're missing out on the whole deal here. This book takes two whole pages to talk about having fun. Happy, joyous, and free. God didn't make our misery. We make our misery. It's all perception. I've been at meetings where I've heard guys say, you know, I'm 2 years sober. And tonight, I'm sleeping in my car. And you're aware when the newcomer says, wow, I wish I had a car. You know, like, so it all depends what's going on in your life. I sat with a guy in the morning, and he said to me, Ken, if my wife leaves, I can't stay sober. I love her, and she's the most important thing in my life. And if she leaves, I can't stay sober. And that's where he was at. I've sat with a guy that same afternoon. He said, that bitch stays, I'm done. I just no way I can, you know, it's just where you are at. It's just where you are at. And if you have any of this other stuff going on, that's your business. I'm just saying it doesn't have to be going on. But at the end, I don't know if you do it here, but in most meetings at the end, people say the Lord's Prayer, the Our Father, whatever you want to call it, and we hold hands and we say, Thy kingdom come, Thy will be done. And then we say, forgive us our trespasses, which is very heavy, as we forgive those who have trespassed against us. If you're constantly going back and evaluating what people did to you in the past, then you're asking to be evaluated that way yourself. I mean, there's no way around that. You're saying, forgive us to the degree we're able to forgive. And you know what? When you let everybody off the hook in here, it's a great feeling because the book talks about it. We clean up our side of the street. We look at where we were at fault. This has absolutely nothing about looking at where the other person was at fault. It has nothing to do with that at all. It has to do with look where we were at fault. And if we clean up our side of the street, it all works out okay. And you come to find out here that this is a lot of fun. This is a lot of fun. And you'll hear a lot of things at meetings, and you'll say to yourself, wow, I never looked at it that way. Or, geez, I would have never thought of that way. That's why I go to meetings. And that's why I hang out with guys who are just as off the wall as me. I mean, guys come to my house sometimes and they're saying, they ring the doorbell and they'll say, I'm having a crisis. So they walk right by me because I don't have any answer for them. And they walk over and I have a little paperweight. It's a snow scene. So they pick it up and they shake it because that's what we do. We need visuals. And then they put it down and we sit down and we watch it. And within a few minutes, guess what? It all settles out. And then they get up and they leave. And the lesson is done. Let go, you know. If you let go, it will come to its natural state. If you're trying to force an answer, you'll never get an answer. It's you're constantly creating a new problem. That's why each generation is so busy. We're always busy undoing what the generation before did. I can't wait to see what our kids have to do. I mean, I went into a store the other day and I was looking at the books on the shelf and I figured, boy, our poor kids really got a bad hand. Some of the books that are selling is unbelievable. Toxic Parents, you know. You'd call my mother toxic. She'd do something you'd never thought of, I'll tell you that. I mean, it's like, this is all made up stuff. This is all, you know, if you say, well, okay, does this create any new data? No. This is all about being selfish and self-centered. I didn't get my way. In fact, my son was saying to my granddaughter, it's a great line, she was crying, and he said, the more you cry, the less I care. And I said, boy, wait till she goes on the Oprah show and says that. Hey, one day, Dad. But I'm real happy that I had a chance to come here. I don't want to run over. We were supposed to start at 7:30, actually. I think we were late getting started. But I just want to say, before you get going in 10 different directions, real simple advice. Read the textbook of Alcoholics Anonymous. Pick it up. All the things it talks about. It talks about a psychic change. If you look up the word psychic, it means soul. You need a soul change. You need soul food. you need to grow spiritually. Now, you may not buy this, but this is what this book is advocating. You need to have spiritual progress, not spiritual perfection. You need to become of maximum service to God and to other people. You need to let go of all your old ideas, which is whatever happened. Now, don't get me wrong. Some kids got some real bad hands growing up. But you can't do anything about that yesterday. What you can do is get on and live a healthy today. You can become resilient in the moment. You can get on and say, I'm going to make my life from this point forward the best I can. And then get on and do it. And you don't have to be running around doing 10 other things. We got the answer here. We have a chapter called this, you know, solution. There is a solution. I love it when people say, Ken, I'm having trouble. What's the solution? Well, let's see in the book if there's anything relating to that. Oh, look at here. Well, then how does this work? Well, I'm sure there's something relating to that. You know? I'm having trouble with my family after I'm sober. Well, let's see if there's anything we can find. You know? It's here. And people sometimes say to me, you know, you make too much of that book. And my answer is, you can't make enough of this book. Because this is the book that has saved literally millions of lives. It's literally millions of lives. And sometimes it's hard for me to keep a level head and say to somebody, you just don't understand that what you're doing is detracting, in many cases, from helping this book help other people. Because what you're doing is you're contaminating the water. You're bringing in ideas that are totally untested from people we know nothing about. Whereas here we have the continuity of people who have been sober 10 years. 15 years, 20 years. AA celebrated a 57-year birthday a couple of weeks back. There aren't too many of these other things have even been around that long. And so the reality here is that this has worked. It's working all over the world. We sell 8,000 of these big books a day. 8,000. Somebody's buying this stuff. I don't know if they're reading it, but a lot of people are buying these things. And the bottom line for the whole thing is that it gives us the answer. And it's an answer I can relate to. I like reading the big book because it gives me answers I can relate to. No matter what goes on, it's a spiritual answer. In the back is a great thing. It talks about the two sins that an alcoholic can commit. And actually, there's two sins that any human being can commit. One is to interfere in the growth of another human being. And the second is to interfere in your own growth. Not allowing yourself to grow. I mean, I hang out with guys who are totally unscarred by education. And they have absolutely no trouble reading this book. They read it and they say, yeah, you know, it makes sense because they're not making stuff up. They don't have any vested interest in some other deal. They have a vested interest in recovery. I wanted to get well. I didn't want to get sicker. I didn't want to find out that this was wrong and that's wrong. I accepted there was a lot wrong. I wanted to get well. I wanted to get on and live today and put my life in order to get on with today. I didn't want to make a career out of being sick. You know? I wanted to get well. And this book helps me to be resilient. It says things like, go and try things. If you don't know, go and try. Get experience. Even if you don't think you're an alcoholic, step next door. Try to drink like a real guy. You could be a winner. But it's your experience. It's not anybody else's experience. And it's about having fun. And it's about recognizing just what the book says, that God could and would if he was sought. We develop a sixth sense here. We don't have to see it, taste it, smell it, feel it, touch it. We just know it. And we know it from the bottom of our soul. It's an out-of-the-mind experience. It's not getting into the mind, it's out of the mind. And you come to the realization that everything is going along just the way it's supposed to. You know, if you think that you have control of God's world, get a glass of water and put your finger in it. Make it whirl. And then take your finger out. See what kind of impact you have. As soon as you're done stirring, it will go right back the way it was. That's God's way of saying... And you know God has a sense of humor. He gave man his sexual peak at 20, woman hers at 40. Hey, work with this. And you just look around and you see folks. You know, I go to meetings and I just watch folks. And it's the greatest growth for me that you could get. I get to see people who couldn't do something who now can. I see people who could never stay sober who are now taking 5, 10, 15, 20, 25, 30, 35, 40, 45, 50-year cakes. I saw a woman take a 50-year cake. You tell her this book doesn't work. She'd slap you till your ears are red, you know? She might say something about your ancestry, too, but, you know? But this is what works. And it's working for a lot of people. And people say, well, how do I know it will work for me? Why don't you give it a chance? Why don't you just flat out give it a chance? Why don't you get a sponsor, go to meetings, read the book, participate in the program, give yourself 20, 30 years. See how it works out. And then in 20 or 30 years, somebody will be giving you a cake instead of making cameo appearances in and out, you know. And relax and enjoy and have some fun. I'm real glad you let me come here tonight. I'm going to tell you a little story about a friend of mine. This is a guy who could never do anything, really. And about 2 years ago, he had been a failure in just about everything. He's been sober 12, 15 years, but he had never really done anything he wanted to do. He was trying to live somebody else's life. And about 2 years ago, he had this idea that he wanted to go and do this thing. And so he went and he tried it. And it was very scary because a lot of people told him he was too old and was too far along in life, et cetera, et cetera. So he went and he tried it. And not only has it worked, but it's turned into a bonanza of a business for him. And now other fools are using his idea and they're going out and they're setting up all these little sublet things. And this guy has made a fortune in the last 2 years. And he came to a meeting about, maybe 2-3 months ago. And he took this 12 or 13-year cake. And he said one of the most profound things I ever heard. He said, you know, I was on the path taking a lot of detours, which I had to take in order to find out what didn't work for me. And most of my life has been predicated on finding out what didn't work. And all you really need is one thing to work. And the one thing that has worked for me is my sobriety, because it allowed me the time to do all this searching. And I thought, wow, how simple. He had the time to do it because he was doing life every day, and that allowed him to try a lot of things, most of which didn't work. And it would have been real easy to just throw up your hands and say, well, that's enough. But his thinking was, and I have to agree with him, that even if he ended up never having a, in quote, great idea, he would have lived a real productive, sober life. The process would have been good. The process would have been healthy instead of re-examining every day and comparing yourself to someone else. This is real, real exciting stuff. I know sometimes I get so excited about it, I almost want to wet my pants. You know, and sometimes I've done that. You know, like, that's why I wear dark trousers most of the time now. Because it's like, as you get older, things happen. Something happens, you know. It's like... But I want to thank you for letting me come here. I hope you all get in touch with this big book. I hope you make it a point just to read a few pages a day. Not read it so as to be a technician about it, but just read it with an open mind. And say, you know, I think maybe I'll try to incorporate that into my life today. Just for today. You know, in the Al-Anon world, they have a great piece of literature. It's called The Merry-Go-Round of Denial. And it's about how you can, if you want to, you can go through the same show over and over and over again. And when you get to the end, if you haven't worked on changing the composite of the play, it will just start over again. The same thing will just start over again. And here what we do is we allow you to every scene, every act, decorate it the way you want it. And use your own colors, you know, use your own colors, use your own costumes, do it whatever way you want. Shakespeare said it's a tale told by an idiot. And it is, if you don't do service work. It's a tale told by an idiot. It's one idiot sharing with another idiot. This won't work. I mean, when you really study about Bill and Bob, you know, they were not dynamite people. They were just human beings. And yet, they were able to put together something that really has worked. I want to thank you for letting me come. I want to thank you for sitting through this. I realized I ran 10 minutes over, but we did start a bit late. I have absolutely no idea what comes next. But for me, I know that whatever it is, it's going to be exciting. You know, it's just going to be exciting. And it doesn't matter what comes next, you know. I have a big time anymore in the closet just picking out a tie, you know. It's like that's the way I am. And I don't know about you guys, I'm going through part-timers now. I know it as I walk into the bedroom and I forget why I'm there. And that's embarrassing to the lady, you know. It's like you say to yourself, like, you know, like, why am I here? You know, like... And keep laughing, because when you're laughing, you're not thinking. And God knows you need the respite, you know, like you need the respite. And try to, you know, try to not have as your favorite theme, I am always on my mind, you know. Try to think in terms of someone else. And if you ever get confused about this thing, open to the back part of this book. And open to the part where the doctor, they have all the medical opinions, right by where they have all the spiritual stuff. And he talks about the fact that in this program, here's the way he reads it, or says it. Alcoholics Anonymous are no crusaders. They're not a temperance society. They know that they must never drink. They help others with similar problems. In this atmosphere, the alcoholic often overcomes his excessive concentration upon himself. And if you can overcome your excessive concentration on yourself, I can guarantee you from experience two things will happen. Number one is you will live happy, joyous, and free. And the other thing is you'll meet many of us as you trudge the road to destiny. God bless you. Thank you very much.